Hello, and welcome to Decade in Review on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the highlights of the past decade. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the comics released for all of the 2010s, because this is the second decade in review that we're doing. So anything where the release year is a 201 something or other.
Yeah.
And really, we're just going to take a step back, talk at a high level, because, man, a lot happens in a year and a ton happens in a decade.
Yeah. I'm a lucky guy. You got to do two of these. But I got to do one. Drew didn't get to do one of these.
No. That was one of the things that changed during the decade is co-hosts.
Yeah.
It changed a time or two, actually. Maybe you'll get to do another one if you stay on long enough.
All right.
We'll see if comics are still around in another 10 years.
Fingers crossed.
You know, with this decade, I think we have seen probably more changes than almost any other decade I can think of in comics.
We've seen quite a few. It's been really crazy, it seems like.
To me, one of the big things, I see three or four major general trends that any one of which could have been a game changer. All of them together, I think, were absolutely game changers. But we had the rise of online retailers.
Yes.
They had been around before. But with like the information accidentally released by Diamond, we got to see just how big of a player something like DCBS is.
Yep.
So certainly I think online retailers are a major force in the industry, which I think is a good thing personally. Not everybody may agree with that. Another thing is digital comics went from kind of existing on the fringe to becoming mainstream and ubiquitous in comics.
Yes. That's been another big trend.
Likewise, we've seen kind of streaming online services come into play, both on the TV and movie side, but also on the comic side. Again, some of that had existed before with the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited dating back to, I think, 2007.
Yep.
But Comixology was bought by Amazon in 2014. That could have been a game changer. Hasn't really seemed to have been a major one, though.
Yeah.
But now we've got the Marvel Unlimited service for comics, DC Universe, Comixology, of course. It's easy to get digital comics in a way that it just wasn't before.
Yeah, and I think all those things impact the retailers so drastically and dramatically with things like back issues and everything.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's one of those where, you know, you compare the landscape of where comics were kind of culturally 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I think the other change that hopefully has benefited the retailers is, I mean, 10 years ago, we had Smallville was still on the air. The first few of the Marvel movies had come out, but it was nothing like where we're at now with Avengers Endgame, the CW shows doing Crisis on Infinite Earths and all that kind of stuff. It's just the cultural acceptance of these things, these characters and whatnot, is so much bigger than it was. It's not even funny.
It really is. I mean, I grew up at a time, and you did too. I don't know, you know, how your town was and where you grew up, but if I mentioned I like comics, you know, you're liable to get beat up for that in school. And to see, you know, growing all these years, now it's like if you mention Marvel or DC in any workplace, it's just as likely that a mother of a kid will know all the Marvel characters, you know, in her 40s who never knew anything about comics as I do. You know, they know these characters. They've seen them in the movie. They watch these things on TV, and it's almost too much material to watch with just how prevalent it's become. It's crazy.
Well, and there's a cultural currency to knowing about these characters that didn't kind of used to exist in the mainstream.
Very much so. Very much so.
You know, if somebody is watching The Boys, Watchmen, Preacher, Lucifer, or any of these even non-obviously comic book related type things, the odds are if you're known in your office as having been or being a comic book reader and stuff, they're going to say, hey, did you watch this? I liked it. You know, what did you think of it kind of stuff?
Exactly. They really do.
You know, it's like being the sports expert or something, but in a geek way.
Yeah. People come to me and they'll ask me stuff about Marvel and DC, whether it's at my CrossFit gym or other places. And I'm like, and I'll tell them stuff. And even my brother-in-law, who's a doctor, he'll look over and he'll be like, he'll ask me questions. But, you know, of course, he's the know-it-all in the family. But, you know, they'll ask me questions. I'm like, oh, here's how this is. Here's who this character is. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a credence to all my effort that I put in over the years.
Exactly. Which is nice.
It's nice. It feels good.
So it's just interesting how widely accepted all of these characters have become over the last decade and such. To me, that is such a game changer that, you know, people now know and care who Aquaman is versus, you know, the Runaways versus Cloak and Dagger or Black Lightning in some of these characters.
Yeah, it's surprising. And, you know, I even go to use my wife as a reference. My wife is a person who has never read a comic and, you know, doesn't really want to read a comic, but I think I might be able to get her read one or two if I really push. But she'll watch the DC shows. She'll watch The Flash. She'll watch Green Arrow. She'll watch Legends of Tomorrow. And she enjoys them, but it's not the material. It's that she doesn't want to consume comics, which is kind of weird. It's the medium that's coming across, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think we're in a day and age where not a lot of people are readers to begin with.
Yeah.
So if you can watch it on TV or otherwise kind of passively consume the content, people are going to go for that. I mean, I get it.
Makes it easy, yeah.
But it's kind of weird that I do think we've got a growing contingent of the mainstream population that is considering themselves comic fans, by which they mean fans of the comic properties, not the format.
Yeah, it's very weird. I don't understand that.
And if we were having this discussion 10 years ago, I mean, that would be an almost unfathomable concept.
Yeah. Now, one thing that did change over the decade was it was really this decade that I came back to comics. It was the Walking Dead TV show that kind of came out that got me to watch that and Comic Book Men, which got me back into the hobby. And to see it come full circle with the ending of the comic book, The Walking Dead, it was just kind of like very odd for me, you know, an odd feeling.
Yeah, I do think that the potential benefit of all these shows and movies and stuff is it's a potential on-ramp for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I don't think enough are taking advantage of that. I don't expect everybody to, but, you know, for every one that does, I mean, that's another person potentially walking into a comic store. I think that's a great thing.
Very true. And I remember when I first started reading, you know, I was reading like Avengers versus X-Men was coming out. And then it was the all new Marvel that launched right after that.
Mm-hmm.
Just fond memories from back then.
Well, I went through and jotted down a couple of notes for DC, for Marvel, for the other premier publishers, and then the non-premier publishers and stuff. Just trying to get a sense in my mind of how much the decade had changed for each of these publishers or publisher groups.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear.
Yeah, starting with DC, I mean, man, I think they had a strong start to the decade. Back in 2010, we had things like Blackest Night, Fables 100 come out. We had Brightest Day, Batman Return of Bruce Wayne, and stuff like that. They were not doing poorly at the time.
No, they were doing well.
Well-ish.
Well-ish, okay.
Because by the time 2011 rolled around, they realized that there was a certain apathy on what they were doing that led to the Flashpoint series for a couple of months and its side series, and the resultant relaunch of the DC Universe with the New 52.
Boom. And I remember that when that happened.
And we had some low sales in early 2011 and such. So I think the need for a shakeup was definitely there. And at this point, Dan Didio and Jim Lee had been with DC for a while that they had enough time to have done a few things before this relaunch.
Yeah.
You know, I forget exactly when 52 launched and when Dan Didio and Jim Lee came to power, but they'd been there for a good couple of years by that point. As we start rolling a little further into the decade, we have Astro City kicking back in. We have Injustice Gods Among Us, the zero-year storyline with Batman. We had Forever Evil. We had Batman Eternal and Multiversity and Grayson around 2014. And that Injustice stuff lasted for a good couple of years.
Yeah, I think it just ended last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Sounds about right, yeah. We had Fables ending with issue 150, which was coincidentally also the 22nd trade paperback, because it was the full trade for that issue in 2015. So, I mean, that went for a while.
I read that, too.
Great stuff.
It was. I enjoyed it.
There was also a few bumps in the road. This was around the time Convergence kicked in. You know, by 2016, we had DC Universe Rebirth. So there was a bit of a course correction there. They did the Future Quest stuff, trying to bring some of the Hanna-Barbera characters into comics. I thought they were successful with that, but, you know, it didn't really stick for the long term. By 2017, we got things like Dark Knight's Metal, the start of Doomsday Clock. 2018, we got Man of Steel and Bendis over at DC, which I think was a big deal.
Yeah,
we also
that was
got
huge.
Action Comics 1000 that year.
Yep.
And then last year in 2019, we had the whole Wonder Comics stuff with Brian Michael Bendis. The Legion of Superheroes came back. The Black Label had been going, but I think they really hit their stride with Harleen. We had Detective Comics 1000. We had Deceased.
Yep.
So there were definitely some high points and some low points over the decade. But when you factor in the Flashpoint New 52 kind of retooling of stuff, the multiversity thing kind of sort of bringing the multiverse back, and then you've got Rebirth, you've got Dark Knight's Metal, you've got Doomsday Clock. There is a I don't say schizophrenic nature to the DC continuity, but man, when you factor in with Rebirth, how they flipped out Superman's on us thanks to Convergence and such, you really see how uncertain it seems like DC is as to where to go with their characters.
Very much so. That's the thing that stood out to me, because when I was going through the decade, I was trying to look at highlights. You know, I kind of wrote down a highlight or two for each year. And I was surprised, because I hadn't read the New 52. I wasn't the DC guy. I jumped in at Marvel. But I was surprised that only 5 years later, you know, it was like redo. And I understand what you mean, because the continuity was completely different for 5 years there. Yeah, a completely different Superman. Now, Batman was the same. But you had a complete change. And then they're like, it almost seemed like, uh-oh, we messed up. Let's go back. And then a herky-jerkiness of where do we want to go? What do we want to happen? We don't know.
The previous Superman back, going for a bit where Batman and Wonder Woman's like, who is this guy? He's not our Superman. And then kind of waving hands to make all that go away as if it had never happened.
Yeah.
That's where I think they've really kind of dropped the ball and had some bumps in the road.
Yeah. And, you know, I hope that they picked up some new readers in the New 52, but I honestly don't know. And I wonder if I would have came in at that New 52 being like a new DC reader at that time, it would have been perfect. You know, new continuity for me. I wonder if I would have been turned off. You know, it's hard to say now because I didn't do that, but I don't know if that change would have done that to me.
I think there's an aspect of some of the New 52 titles that almost harkens back to 90s era Marvel in terms of trying to really impress people, but really kind of not hitting all the right beats in terms of solid storytelling, good art, and stuff like that. I mean, I liked some of the New 52 stuff. I think it was a success in terms of getting people interested in what DC was doing, but I don't think if you were to go read Blackhawks or some of the other titles they had there, Hawk and Dove or a few of the others, I don't know that you'd have been sold on them.
I might have just been like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's weird. And it went away and it's not talked well of, but I did pick up some, you know, info from back then. You know, I want to check out the Grayson run, which I heard was good. And I'm going to read the Batman stuff from back then. And I do have the Green Lantern stuff, which I heard was excellent.
I do recommend the Grayson stuff that was around 2014, as well as Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Batman Eternal. That's another one. Yeah.
I thought the Forever Evil storyline was a lot of fun. I do think there was a point where they were really, you know, going in the right direction, doing some good stuff. I think they had a good plan, maybe not the best execution on all of it, but I think they didn't have a long enough plan or a way to keep projecting the plan further and further out.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I think, and I don't know how to fix this with DC, but I think a big coup for them was getting Brian Michael Bendis to go over it, re-energized him. And I think it's re-energizing the company a little bit with what he's doing. But I think they need to find a way to better develop new talent instead of just, bringing in the known names. I don't want that to sound bad, but I'd like to see them. You see a lot of these odd names that come in over at Marvel that become big names, like Donny Cates. Nobody really read him, that much. Now he's over at Marvel and he's been doing good things. I'd like to see a little bit more development of the new talent over at DC with new thoughts, new ideas.
I run hot and cold on that because, I hear what you're saying. I definitely think Brian Michael Bendis was the right move for DC. That worked out much better than anyone had any right to expect, including Brian Michael Bendis and DC.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm glad it has worked out so well. And while I agree they need to be able to groom and promote talent, new talent and stuff there, I also think if there's established, pros out there, pull them in too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, don't just leave them out there. Yeah, put them out the pasture or anything. But I probably said it not too eloquently.
I know what you're getting at, because if all you're doing is taking, established talent and saying, well, play with our characters because we don't know what to do with them, that's bad.
Yeah, you may get the same stories. That's the only thing I worry about, because I think, and I'm not going to pick on Brian, but I think if I've been writing stories for 15 or 20 years, and he's been writing Marvel for quite a long time, and now he's writing at DC too, there may be a tendency to pick up on certain tropes that you kind of go to, or certain reveals. And I'm not saying that he's doing that because I haven't seen it and I really enjoy his writing, but there's a little bit of a danger. And that's why I say you always need that fresh blood and new ideas coming out there that may invigorate. You want to keep the old talent that knows what they're doing, and you want to have some new fresh talent and get them bouncing off each other and bringing each other to new heights.
Absolutely. You want to have that mix of the established pros that can help groom the new talent, but also the new people that can either fill in on the, I don't say the lower books or whatever, but that can be that potential for that breakout talent.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to see in the next decade, is a breakout talent of a no-name, somebody who we don't know, who started at DC, the new no-name.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be kind of cool.
I'd settle for just DC kind of riding the ship, because when I looked over the decade and stuff, again, there was some great stuff that they had done.
Yeah.
But even some, established people, Bill Willingham on the Fable stuff for the first half of the decade, has he really done much with them lately?
Yeah, that's true. Not really.
And I think that DC has really struggled to figure out where they want to go and how to get there for their core universe.
Very much so.
They've established that map of the multiverse as far back as 2014-ish, and we really haven't seen tons in the multiverse.
No, we haven't seen anything other than a little bit with the breaking of the source wall with that event, but really it didn't deal much with it. It just showed glimpses of it.
Other than maybe Justice League Odyssey, has the source wall thing really been a thing for the last year?
Not really. Yeah. It was just kind of like the event that happened. That was it. It happened, and that was it.
It was a big deal in a few titles, it was a story explanation for some of the Titan stuff.
But it seems like nobody else picked up on it.
Yeah. Well, and then when they revamped the Titans, it stopped being a big deal at all.
Yeah, very much so.
I think DC is directionless, and I think that's a problem.
It is, and they definitely need to find their true north and get headed there, because for them just to be floating around in the ocean right now, this is the end of the decade, that's where they are. It's really kind of almost feels like, and I don't want to sound bad, but the lost decade for DC. With the new 52, where they are now, it's just been a rough decade for them.
Yeah, I can see that. I think they ended on a decent note for the first decade of the century.
Yeah.
But quickly lost their way and have been kind of floundering since. And I don't feel they're on solid footing now.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So I think going into the 2020s, that it's not that it's a rebuilding decade for them, but they got to rebuild, but two, they got to solidify. And if they come out of this next decade with as much churn in continuity as they've had in this past decade, I mean, that's a problem. I mean, look at Nightwing. He started as Nightwing at the beginning of the decade, yep. Technically got killed off for ever so slightly, became a super spy in Grayson, came back, led the Titans for a little bit, the original Titans, led a different group of Titans for a little bit, and, basically got
Something happened to him with his head.
Yeah, I was going to say, got shot in the head and became, you know, an amnesiac, yet somehow miraculously survived. You know, and it's, we've had very different takes on that character over the last decade, and that's one of the foundational characters in the DC universe.
Very much so. It's been really weird because Nightwing, when I was reading it, I was enjoying it when it was in Bloodhaven, and it was a good read, and I was on board, and then boom, out of the blue, he doesn't, and now there's a team of Nightwings. It's just not something I'm interested in. That took me off the title.
Well, actually, I think at the start of the decade, he was Batman.
Oh, yeah. Very true.
So, I mean, we've seen a lot with that character, and it, to me, that's just, again, a litmus test for how directionless and how volatile the DC universe is.
Yeah, and that makes me a little bit sad, because I do want DC to do well. I want them to do well so that I can enjoy the best DC there is. And right now I feel like I'm reading a DC that's struggling. There's books that I really enjoy, and then there's books that I'm like, I just can't get into it.
Yeah, my concern is that they're hearing these sorts of things and then saying, well, if you want everything, we'll put it all back, leading to the 5G stuff. And I'm not going into the 2020s thinking they're on the right path.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. And the 5G stuff, I don't know. I guess in 2020, that's going to happen. It's going to be a thing. Why they picked 5G, I don't know. It sounds like the next iteration of our cell service.
Well, it's literally the fifth generation. They're going to go back and basically establish that there was the original generation of Justice Society-ish characters, followed by the Justice League characters, followed probably by maybe the Titan characters, followed maybe by like the Young Justice in that next era of characters, and then we're going to be in a new era of characters after that.
Here's the new ones. Yeah, so I'll keep my fingers crossed, but it's a little bit worrisome because I have a feeling that they'll go down this road and then they'll have to right the ship again.
Yeah, I think so, and I really don't want that to happen, but I just don't see how it can't.
Yeah, me too. So it's almost with trepidation we're going towards this. I think initially it may get a big sales boost in the next decade, in 2020, but, you know, closing out 2019, it's just a little bit worrisome. I guess there's, yeah, like I said, trepidation going into the next decade.
Yeah, I think it was a rough decade for DC. They had some moments where they were going in the right direction, but they didn't stay that way for long, unfortunately.
Yeah, and they do have some real highlights. I mean, with Batman, with the Snyder Capullo run, with Green Lantern, with Geoff Johns and Venditti. They've had some real winners out there. So I know they can do it when they're putting their best foot forward.
Yeah, I just want to see more of that than, say, the Tom King Batman run or the Grant Morrison Green Lantern run, you know, stuff like that.
Exactly. The antithesis to the good ones.
Yeah, for every good thing they had, I think they had an equal and opposite bad thing, sometimes even with those same characters.
Very true. Those were perfect examples.
I think that's ironic.
Yes.
If we take a look over at Marvel, man, a lot had happened for them in the decade. I think overall, it was a good decade for them.
I would agree with that. They started off, they were a little bit, I would say, in a weird place with the all new for me.
We look back at 2010, we had Hickman on Fantastic Four.
Yep, that was a great run.
Siege was going on. The next mm-hmm. year, we had Abnett and Lanning doing things like Heroes for Hire, Villains for Hire, which was kind of fun.
Yep.
We had Fear Itself. We had Paulo Rivera and Marcos Martin doing some really interesting stuff with visual storytelling on Daredevil.
Yep.
2012, we hit the Avengers versus X-Men stuff.
Mm-hmm.
2013, we got Wade and Samnee over on Daredevil doing some great work. We had Superior Spider-Man, I think, was a total game changer for Spider-Man. That was, I think, I mean, I know it wasn't for everybody, but I really enjoyed that.
I thought it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, too.
We had Battle of the Atom, we had Young Avengers, and we had Age of Ultron.
Yep.
Rolling into 2014, again, great stuff on Daredevil. Nightcrawler got a series for a bit. We had Original Sin, we had Death of Wolverine. 2015, though, man, that was, I think, a big year for Marvel.
Yeah, as far as sales, I think.
Oh, yeah. Star Wars, Secret Wars. Mark Waid doing stuff over on Daredevil, S.H.I.E.L.D., Princess Leia, Nick Spencer over on Ant-Man, Astonishing Ant-Man, doing some fun stuff. I think he was really starting to get known then. The Darth Vader title with the introduction of Triple Zero and BT-1, Yep. That took the character, the series to, I think, a whole new level and stuff, and just showed they weren't messing around when it came to the Star Wars franchise or their own properties.
No, they were having fun with it.
2016, for me, some of the highlights were the Vision series. Tom King actually did some really good work there.
I would say that's a highlight of his career.
Probably. We had Civil War II. Man, Nick Spencer was knocking it out of the park. Yep. He was the writer on Captain America, Sam Wilson, Captain America, Steve Rogers, Assault on Pleasant Hill, also doing some stuff on Astonishing Ant-Man. The Assault on Pleasant Hill actually was a surprisingly good story and really kind of revectored a couple of titles before and after it.
It really did. And you just mentioning these titles brings up such fond memories because I really enjoyed reading it.
Well, and even a few things that were almost sort of throwaway issues or whatever. I really enjoyed the Guardians of the Galaxy number 15 they did in 2016, which I would have renamed to Ben Grimm Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 0.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those, oh, yeah, I remember. It's one of those fond memories, good stuff.
It was. It really was.
Going into 2017, they did a really good run with the Poe Dameron series for Star Wars. The Captain America Steve Rogers stuff certainly got some notoriety going into Secret Empire. The Marvel 2-in-1 series was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Going into 2018, Wade was doing some good stuff with Doctor Strange. We got the No Surrender storyline for Avengers, the Return of Wolverine. We got the Fantastic Four back either at the end of 2018 or beginning of 2019.
Yep.
But man, 2019, really, I think the hallmark there was House of X, Powers of X going into Dawn of X.
Oh, yeah, that was the big one for 2019, I think.
Yeah. And
Hickman Returns.
Yeah, and they had numerous other events, War of the Realms, Absolute Carnage, 2099, etc. They were doing stuff.
A lot of stuff. It seemed like they went from events at the beginning of the decade to they tried to not do too many events because people were talking about getting burnout events, to almost like they doubled down but made them fun and didn't have them have the events affect all the other titles. They learned from their lesson with that.
I think they stopped doing line-wide events and did more kind of family of titles sort of things.
Yeah, and it made it fun, and if you were reading that family of titles, so if I was reading Spider-Man, I can read Spider-Geddon, and if I'm not into Spider-Man, I can just do my, you know, Avenger stuff over here, and it's not impacted by Spider-Geddon. And I think they learned their lesson from doing the big splash, like a Secret Wars, that some people didn't like that.
Yeah, I think there's an art to doing these sorts of things that is tough to do, because, you know, you want to have big storylines or whatever.
Yeah, big impactful things that impact the universe.
Well, that's the thing, is I think there's just the run-of-the-mill, it's another story I've got to tell. Then there's kind of a milestone storyline that, at least for that character, there's a before, during, and after.
Yep.
And then there's kind of that universe-level event.
Yeah, the big thing.
You know? But for like the Fantastic Four, one of the milestone stories was them kind of going off into, you know, another realm for a while. You know, there's definite before and after that happened.
Exactly.
You know, for other titles, it's other things. But they had a lot of that kind of going on across their lineup throughout the decade.
I think it made it feel like it was lively and fresh and something was always going on. Something
Absolutely.
Was always happening. Yeah, so I never felt bored, I would say. I felt like, wow, here's this next bit of thing. Now, if it's done the wrong way, like the end of that Agents of Atlas, it can burn you a little bit. But well, if it's done the right way, it works really well.
And not everything went off, you know, great, because I think it was the Age of Ultron event that kind of fizzled and stuff like that.
Yep.
So they had a few things earlier in the decade that, you know, in terms of did they land the ending on the events? Not so much. And there were some other times where, yeah, it was easy to get a little disenchanted with where Marvel was going. I think there was one or two times they started to go off the rails, but never for too long.
Yeah, I would agree. It was right around that 2013 to 2014 time frame, somewhere in there, maybe where it felt like it was getting kind of rough, and then they turned it around really quick.
Yeah. I mean, I don't expect any publisher to go through a full decade with no misfires, no problems. It's a question of how many do they have, and is it what you remember, or do you remember the, hey, there was all these great things they did during that decade?
Yeah, and I think one of the ways to end the decade really well was, I think, the energy and the vision with C.B. Sobolski coming in, which I never knew the guy before he was hired as the new editor-in-chief. I think he's done really well in the position.
I would agree with that. I think they're doing some good stuff now. Again, I think, you know, my enjoyment of Fantastic Four, Doctor Strange, the X titles and stuff like that really shows, you know, how well they're doing in that area. And likewise, I think they're having similar success with other readers on Thor, the cosmic characters, etc.
Yeah, it's been a fun time to be a Marvel fan, I would say.
Well, and I feel that the continuity we entered the decade with is the continuity we exited the decade with.
Yeah, which is always a plus, I would say.
I certainly think it's a good thing, but yeah, know, that's not always what they try to do.
Sometimes things happen.
Well, and it's funny because that Secret Wars thing arguably could have rebooted the universe.
I almost thought that was the direction they were headed when I was reading it, and they didn't do it, but still made it quite entertaining.
Well, I think part of it was the delays on that kind of caused some problems.
Yeah.
But even so, it's not one that was... I mean, by the time the final issues came out, we knew how things had ended because we'd already been reading in that continuity for a few months.
I remember that. That was kind of funny.
You know, but it wasn't as prolonged as, say, Doomsday Clock. And while they jumped forward about 8 months saying, oh, we'll fill in the gaps later, it really got to where people stopped caring about those initial questions. I'm not even sure they really answered most of them.
Yeah, very true. Very true. You know, one thing I would say, I feel like Marvel, you know, they're not perfect, but they are doing very well right now here at the end of the decade.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that they've learned from their errors. You know, they learned from doing the line-wide events to doing the family events. And they also learned with a writer like a Hickman, and it may be because he had left for a little while to recuperate and work on some private stuff and then come back. But I felt like they let him write the whole story for Powers and House of X before he even came back. It felt like it was finished because it came out very timely, very rapidly. There was no delays on the art or anything. And I think if you have a Doomsday Clock or if you have a House or Powers, you almost need to go into it because you have deep enough pockets. Pay for the event so that you're not creating a mess on the back end like they did with Secret Wars.
Yeah.
And that makes the event more enjoyable and more organic, and the sales kind of naturally percolate up because people are excited.
Well, I think it's a matter of Marvel seems to be more willing to let some of their lead creators do a bit more architecting of the universe than maybe DC does.
I would agree. It feels more editor-driven over at DC.
Yeah, and I think that's not to DC's advantage.
No, because then you run the risk of having disillusioned or people who feel almost a little bit powerless. They see the errors, they want to change things, but they don't have the power to change them.
I mean, I think, and this is outsider looking in, so I could be totally off base on this, but yeah. It seems like Marvel has a better sense of who their characters are, where they want their universe to go, or what rails to operate within, that allows their editors to work with creative teams, knowing those things, both the editors and the creators and stuff. And hey, as long as you stay, I don't say in your lane or whatever, but don't go crazy, or if you do, give me enough time to run it up the flagpole kind of a thing to allow for things like Cosmic Ghost Rider, etc. They can go do some out-of-the-box stuff over at Marvel, whereas DC is like, seems like they're hiring people to tell this story that they want to tell, that they, the editor or the company, wants to tell.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
No, I don't think it's... I think that's a lot of why we're seeing a big difference between Marvel and DC.
Yeah. And if that's the case, it really does need to be almost like a change of management, you know, because the people in a company, you know, I work in a company, you work in a company, you know, people work in companies, they tend to follow the direction of the person in charge as long as they respect them. And so I'm assuming everyone respects, you know, people at DC or Marvel and the positions they're at, I'm hoping. But if you respect that person, you're following their direction, and they're not taking down the right path, or they're, maybe that needs to be changed. And I think I saw that with Marvel, and I think, you know, just for refreshing, not that I want to abuse anyone or say anything bad about them, I think that needs to be refreshed over at DC, because I think that could really reinvigorate the company and reinvigorate the talent that's already there.
Definitely, I see where you're coming from on that, and don't disagree. I do wonder at times how much of it is that maybe you've got somebody at the top of either Marvel and DC that have the right ideas, have the right vision, have the right way to work with the creators and stuff, but is it that level of editor that's actually doing the day-to-day stuff with the creators that's not on board, not following the right thing, not, you know, is the disconnect at that level of boots-on-the-ground management or visionary management?
And that's where, without being inside, it's tough to know. But there's some disconnect in there somewhere. And unfortunately, you and I can't see it. We only look at the numbers and we look at the trends of the company. And the trends of the company is like DC needs some a little bit of work, a little bit of tender love and care.
Well, yeah, I think there's a vision aspect of DC that's out of alignment that Marvel seems to be doing fairly well with. And I think part of it is while they've got a vision of where they want to go, they're also open and willing to let somebody like a Jonathan Hickman either take the reins for Fantastic Four for a while, or the Avengers for a while, or currently X-Men for a while, and not give him carte blanche, because I think DC has actually done that inadvertently a few times, and this is where you wind up with characters going completely off the rails, and they're realizing, crap, that's not the character that we want that character to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I know DC can achieve new levels. I know they have the talent there that I want to read currently on the roster. You know, I look at Bendis, I want to read him. I look at Snyder, I want to read his stuff. I look at Geoff Johns, I want to read his stuff. It's just getting that all coordinated, and I don't know where the disconnect is, but it can be fixed. I just want them to fix it sooner rather than later.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, again, I think Marvel... You know,
they had a good decade, I think.
Yeah, in addition to the comics doing well, you look at the strides they've made outside of comics. On the movie front, oh my god, I mean, it's now a powerhouse franchise for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's just been insane with the MCU.
You know, they're starting to make huge inroads on the TV/streaming service side. I mean, the stuff they did with Netflix over the decade was a huge win. Doing things over on Hulu and other places for Runaways, Cloak and Dagger, Legion, The Gifted over on Fox, the Disney Plus stuff coming up. They're able to get their characters out there to a fairly wide audience.
Yeah, Disney is becoming a juggernaut in the content field. They are taking the characters that we love and just bringing them to new heights and taking over mega franchises. Well, I mean, DC took over Marvel. They took over Star Wars franchise.
Disney,
I'm sorry. It took over Marvel and took over the Star Wars franchise. And they're just expanding along with the cartoons and everything that they do, that they're really taking over basically Hollywood and the box office.
Well, yeah, because I'd seen an article a couple of days back that I had sent you that, according to Variety, a decade ago, beginning of the decade, Disney was, how do they phrase it, quote unquote, enfeebled. I don't know exactly what they mean with that, but I think it meant doing pretty poorly.
Yes.
But how, as of 2019, Disney accounted for like a third of the box office.
Which is just nuts.
For movies. That's insane.
A third of the box office. And had the top grossing film of all time that just passed Titanic, which I thought would never happen. Or Titanic, and then what was the other one? Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just crazy.
I mean, you look at how they're doing with the Marvel stuff, the Avengers movies and stuff like that. They're doing really well with the Star Wars stuff, plus, you know, everything else they've got going on. It's insane.
Yeah. They've really capitalized. Now, the one thing I would say DC has done in the decade on the flip side, now Marvel's doing some stuff on the streaming. I think they're getting a little bit ahead of DC. I think they've done very well with TV. And getting their stuff out there on the CW, they just have so much content, so many DC shows out there. It's just impressive.
Well, and not just the DC characters on the CW, but they've gotten Preacher out there. They've gotten Lucifer out there. I think there's even one or two others and stuff. iZombie.
Watchmen on HBO. I just thought about that. Yeah,
yeah, Watchmen, iZombie. Yeah, tons of stuff.
They just have so much content out there that they have. It's kind of weird that DC's dominating almost like in the TV market a little bit, while Disney's been dominating in the box office.
Well, and you factor in Titans, Doom Patrol, and stuff like that on the DC Universe service. So they're definitely, like you said, doing the storytelling more on the TV side, whereas on the movie side, they're getting clobbered by Marvel.
Yeah, what's kind of interesting to me is it seems like on the TV side, the continuity or the direction or the leadership seems to be lockstep. They just can crank out so much material and get so much good material out there. But on the movie side, it's almost like the comics where They've had some hits and they've done well, but the vision's lacking for the entire universe, I would say.
Well, I think the success DC's having on TV, granted, the story is not done yet, but the first three parts of the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover,
yeah,
that not only included the CW shows, but had, inclusion for Titans,
Lucifer,
Birds of Prey from the 2003 or whenever that was, Smallville, other shows than just theirs.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see iZombie pop up.
I wouldn't expect it to, because that might have been a creator-owned thing over in Vertigo.
That's true, yeah.
But pretty much most of the DC characters, I'd be hard-pressed to name any that haven't shown up.
Yeah, it's been crazy. Even Lucifer, I mean, you name it, they're all there. And I was really impressed with that. I was not expecting it.
What got me with Lucifer 1 is it was actually germane to the story.
Yeah, it was. I was like, wow. And the story had kind of wrapped up on TV other than it being on Netflix now. But it was just, I thought it was really well done. And I don't pay attention to the shows in depth, but I decided to watch that and I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shall we hop over to the other premier publishers?
Yeah, let's do that.
For this one, there's less of an overall theme for the decade because we're talking, you know, Dark Horse, Image, IDW, Boom, and Dynamite and stuff. So a couple of different companies.
Yeah.
I think at the beginning of the decade, there were a couple of things that were of particular note. The Artifacts and Top Cow arc, I think, was still going pretty much full swing over there,
mm-hmm.
although it quickly unraveled. Mark Waid was over at Boom Studios doing things like Irredeemable and Incorruptible. And then we also had the season 8 for Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of kick in comics.
Yeah.
That definitely brought some people in. Over in 2011, I think the highlights for me were more on the Image side, really. We had Morning Glories. That was pretty good.
Very good.
Who is Jake Ellis? That was good. Spun off a second series that was delayed, and then it just kind of fizzled. And then for me, one that I just feel I have to mention, and this is, again, 2011, we had Non-Player number 1. And here we are nearly a decade later from that, and we've had a second issue come out.
That's hilarious.
Beautifully done. 2012, we had the start of Saga. I think 2013 might have been when Lazarus started, also when Jupiter's Legacy started. 2014, we saw the beginning of Wicked and Divine, Autumnland's Tooth and Claw, Genius, Alex and Ada, Stepan Sage with Death Vigil, Ravine, while he was also doing some of the Top Cow stuff. 2015, we started getting things like Chrononauts. Mac Hawkins was really kicking in with Tithes, Tale of Honor, Bred to Kill, Symmetry, X Generation, plus a ton of his other titles after that. McKelvey was continuing with things like Wicked and the Divine, Phonogram, Immaterial Girl going on. We started getting some more Star Trek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Orphan Black was a big deal, but that was partially because it was included in a subscription box, so that's back when we still had some wonkiness with the numbers. 2016, we get things like Fuse, Red Team Double Tap, the start of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers comic book.
Yep.
So, what, 20-some-odd years after that property came out as a hit in TV, somebody finally cracked how to make it work in comics. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Then later in the decade, we got things like Elsewhere, Black Magic, Skyward, Uncle Scrooge over at IDW. And then this last year, Chrononauts with Future Shock. Brian Haberlin, of course, had some stuff throughout the decade, ending with Sonata and Marked.
Yep.
Really, I think there was just some solid stuff throughout.
There was a lot of solid material. It was a fun decade for independent, I guess you would call them, or other publishers. A lot of good material, you know, in nothing too much. You could get your sci-fi, you could get your horror, you could get your slice of life, you could get your whatever, or your licensed properties, and just have a blast.
Yeah, I think the other premier publishers, and of course it was partway through that I'm trying to remember when IDW became a premier publisher. I think it was earlier in the decade. And then certainly more recently, Boom and Dynamite getting promoted to that level.
Yeah.
But I think they did some solid stuff. When we start looking at the other non-premier publishers and such, again, there's just a ton going on there. And, I mean, you look back at the beginning of the decade, Radical Comics was still going strong. We got I believe the start of Atomic Robo in 2011. And I could be off on some of these things. Love and Capes.
Oh, I love that.
Valiant started publishing again in 2012.
Yep.
Black Mask Studio and Action Lab started in 2013, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
2015, Mark Waid redoes the Archie franchise, really reinvigorated that.
I loved it.
Doctor Who moved from IDW over to Titan. Uncle Scrooge and the other Disney characters were over at IDW. They had been over at Boom at the beginning of the decade, but I think that stopped as of 2011. Also in 2015, Aftershock Comics, American Mythology Productions, and Chapter House Comics all started publishing.
Wow, that's cool.
Coffin Comics, I think, started in 2016.
Yep.
2017, we got Vault Comics and Alterna Comics. Ahoy in 2018. The H1 line from Humanoids in 2019, along with TKO and Ablaze in 2019.
Yeah, it's been a real, just a ton of publishers have opened in this really difficult economy.
Well, and a few have gone away. Radical was going strong at the beginning of the decade and has long since gone.
Yeah. And when I say economy, I'm talking about the comic economy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a rough marketplace. It's easier to start a comic than to keep one going.
Yeah. It's just crazy how many publishers are open. But there have been those that have closed. But, I mean, I've just been impressed with the amount of good new material that's come out recently.
Well, and how we've seen a couple of long-term licensed properties shift from one place to another.
Yeah, very surprising. And, you know, some of that was expected, some unexpected. And, you know, Dark Horse took some lumps with them losing the Star Wars license in this last decade, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, and with that, you know, they lost the Buffy stuff and the whole Whedonverse stuff that went over to Boom.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that was a major change in that this last decade.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Star Wars changed hands for who's publishing it. Same with Doctor Who. The Buffy stuff, the Uncle Scrooge characters. So, I mean, quite a bit moved around.
Yeah, it really did. But overall, there was just a ton of good material that came out, but almost too much material at times because you used to read a lot more than at the beginning of the decade than you did at the end of the decade. But
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but there's almost I'm just amazed with how much material comes out that there should never be want of something to be out there, because if you like any genre, it's literally being published right now, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so. And what I'm seeing is less publishers that kind of start up and fade out quickly.
Yeah, they're sticking around a little bit longer.
They do seem to be coming in with a better game plan and sticking around for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the last one that I can remember just off the top of my head that kind of came in and fizzled out, I think it was Take-Two Comics. They came out with this whole zombie line.
Mm.
And I don't know if you remember them, but they released all their comics, and there's like 10 trades at a time, and you can buy them all. And they were there for like maybe a year and then disappeared.
Yeah, and there was a period where I would go to San Diego Comic-Con, and this was decades ago, and you would see the big booth for the new up-and-coming publisher that was going to come out shortly after Comic-Con, and they were previewing their stuff. And then by next year, it's like, who were they again?
Yeah, what were those people named? That's kind of funny.
There's a lot less of that going on today, I think.
Yeah, a lot less. It seems like the new publishers that are coming out, they're able to get decent creators that I was surprised, like TKO getting Garth Ennis and then getting Jeff Lemire to write titles over there at a brand new upstart, and they don't own the work. It's just impressive. And then also the same thing, Aftershock, when they came out, they had a Garth Ennis book. They've had a lot of big names. They have a Cullen Bunn writing there. And I think it's, I can't remember the guy's name who is the publisher over there or the editor. I think it's Mars, something Mars. I can't remember.
Ron Mars? Which one?
I might have the name wrong, but but anyways, the guy who's the editor there at Aftershock had a very deep Rolodex. He had worked at Marvel, and he was able to connect with those people and get big names on. So it seems like they're coming out with a game plan, and they're not doing it willy-nilly and just saying, let's make some quick cash.
I think creators are more willing to go with some of these smaller publishers if they're confident they're going to get paid, if it's a good deal, etc. I mean, it's not just a slam dunk, but it's much more viable than it used to be.
Yeah, I would say it is. And it seems like they got the science down to what it costs them to be profitable in the business, where I think a lot of publishers used to just say, I have an idea, Image won't do it, or someone won't do it, and they create their own publishing company, it seemed like, and they're in and out, you know?
Boom. Well, and we've got a couple of these publishers that are not, at the moment, defunct, but I'm not sure we'll see them in 10 years from now.
Yeah, there's some.
American Mythology Productions started with some Stargate stuff and some other things. They're doing okay, but they're not big.
Yeah, they're very small.
And then Chapter House, which had done some Captain Canuck stuff and some other things. I'm not sure the last time they've come out with an actual single issue. Maybe they've gone to trade and stuff like that.
I don't even remember. I used to see them in previews. I don't even remember seeing them in the last previews. They may not even be in there. So there's things that just kind of disappear into the ether. And so it still happens. It's just not published or talked about very much.
Well, and I think if you're going into comics these days, in my opinion, you need to have a game plan such that you have a reason to be in previews each and every month.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just opened up this previews, and yeah, Chapter House is not even in there. So, you know, maybe they'll come back stronger, who knows, but or they could be gone.
I don't think they're totally dead, but they may have gone digital only. I don't know. But there are a couple of these that are not as strong as, say, you know, Action Lab or Valiant or Vault, Arterna, Ahoy, Aftershock, and some of those.
Yeah. Now, one thing that happened this decade, because I don't remember it happening last decade, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've been impressed to see some writers and creators out there, artists, go digital to just get their material out there and then turn around and collect it and sell it, you know, through Diamond and through comic shops after it's been on the web for a while. And that's been a nice trend that I've seen.
You know, I didn't even think to look at like Kickstarter, Indiegogo and stuff to see how that's been kind of a game changer over the last decade for comics.
Yeah, and I imagine it has been because there's things that you see in previews that started off as Kickstarter. And I've only done one Kickstarter, and it was kind of cool just to see it happen. But that's been a big phenomenon. People, you know, if you can't get it published, they do a Kickstarter, they get it published, and then they go to trade shows and they sell it. I mean, I'm looking at Menage a Trois, which is one of my fun reads, and it was a web comic that started that way. And you look at, I'm trying to think of his name, the guy who does Time and Vine.
Tom Zoller.
Yeah, I think did he start web comics or no?
I think he was doing some of the stuff as web comics, yeah.
Yeah, and then published it, and I just love his material. And it's just been very impressive to see, like you said, the Kickstarter, the Indiegogo, the webcomic to the publishing. That's just brought in so much more content that I wouldn't have been aware of just going to my local comic shop back, you know, a decade ago, more than a decade ago.
Well, and I think we're seeing some different ways to get the material out there. Again, the crowdfunding stuff with those venues. The web provides a ton of things, of course. I think the options for getting published through some of these other publishers is certainly better than it used to be, say, a decade ago. I think we're in a potential growth area for comics right now. I say potential versus actual because it's still a rough market out there. It's never not going to be.
Yeah, it's still a rough market. And one other thing, you know, it's an outlet for comics because it seems like stuff has become more and more prevalent. It seems like the whole Comic-Con scene or the con scene has just exploded over this last decade. And not just with the attendance from people, you know, there's you know, millions or hundreds of thousands of people that go to these things, but it's an outlet for the vendors. Like you see the creators go there and they print special editions for these shows and they're very profitable just going from con to con to con that they can actually fund projects that they're working on by selling their trades at cons. It's insane.
Well, I think with the increase of visibility of a lot of these properties through movies and television and stuff, it opened the con up to a much wider audience than just those of us who read comics.
Yeah, much more so.
So I definitely think that over this last decade with conventions that we've seen not only that kind of explode in just the number of conventions out there to where in most weekends, granted the wintertime not so much because it's inhospitable in certain parts of the country and stuff, but most of the year, there's probably two or three conventions going on in the nation at any given weekend.
Yeah, very true. Which is just, it's just kind of jaw-dropping when I think about it, how many conventions there are.
Well, and I think from my perspective, San Diego kind of hit that peak geek moment probably 2-3 years ago when there was just so much going on at Comic-Con, parties everywhere, pop-up locations, other kind of, you know, activation events or what have you. And that's kind of died down the last few years.
So it's actually getting a little bit smaller?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you think that's due to just the number of cons there are, or is it just gotten too expensive? Or what do you attribute it to?
I think it's more an expense and less return on the investment.
Oh, for like the vendors and the people who go there.
I mean, literally, I was there a couple of years back, and it seemed like every major intersection in the Gas Lamp, which is the bar restaurant area, you would see parties every direction the eye could see.
Wow.
You know, down that way, oh, they're going to have the Godzilla thing, or they're going to have the Flynn's Arcade from Tron, or over here you go see this or whatever. That sort of thing still happens, but not quite to the extent it was happening when it's just, you know, San Diego Comic-Con had taken over that entire convention center and at least, I don't know, a quarter mile, half mile radius in all directions.
Which is just nuts, because I've been there before one time, not for Comic-Con, though.
Yeah.
That's just crazy, and that's a huge area.
And that's not to say there still isn't a lot going on. There is.
It's just scaled back a little.
It's not as much as there used to be.
Huh. So, I think that outlet for the creators, you know, going to the conventions, and I think creators, they don't go to Comic-Con. They don't go to a lot of the really big shows. It seems like they're hitting up the smaller shows because they're looking to turn a profit. They show up with, you know, a truck full of trades or boxes full of trades, and they're there to sign the book and sell it at full price, you know, $19.99 versus whatever they sell it at a discount through Diamond.
I think if you are a creator and you can get by car somewhere,
yeah,
that means you can haul all your stuff for free.
That's crazy if you don't do that.
It may take a little longer to do it that way, so there's pros and cons, but I do think the convention scene, if you do it well, can be very beneficial. But I think it's, like you said, the smaller conventions where it costs you less to get in the door, you know, you're not having necessarily pay as much for the hotels or the table or something like that as you might at a San Diego or something.
Exactly.
And certainly if you can get into the Artist Alley at San Diego or C2E2 or some of the others where that's free, man, you should.
Yeah, definitely. It's been really, I feel like, a good decade. And I felt like the market boomed, even though DC kind of struggled throughout periods of the decade. I felt like Marvel did well. I felt like Image did very well. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed that they ended the decade with The Walking Dead ending and Saga on hiatus. Maybe it'll come back. Who knows? I feel like we're in a vibrant market. It's not, you know, the healthiest market that it could ever be, but I feel like it's vibrant right now.
But it's not the worst market it could be either. If you look at,
very true,
again, the beginning of the decade in 2011, so just a year or two in, things were bleak.
Yeah, very bleak.
So, I mean, we may not be at the best sales we've ever had, but we did have those during this decade.
Yeah, this was a heck of a decade. It was a roller coaster ride. And like I said, I had a lot of fun. It brought me back into comics. I was happy. And specifically, just the avenues for people to become fans of the properties has been amazing to me. From TV, that got me back into my comics, to movies that allows me to talk and people not look at me like I'm a weirdo when I mention comics in public, to just the sheer enjoyment of seeing everything come full cycle with the companies, you know, like characters. You know, DC started off on a little bit of a low, then they went to a super high, then they went back to a low. And the same thing with Marvel. They kind of went in the opposite, started at a high, went a little bit lower in the middle, and then back to a high. I would like to see them sync up and both be at highs at some time, but I fear for them both being at lows at the same time.
Even if the sales aren't spectacular, there is a cultural acceptance of the material.
There really is.
That's just an all-time high.
An all-time high, and it's never been a better time to be a fan of comic books, I feel like. Like I said, did you grow up in a time where, I don't know where you grew up, but did you receive ridicule for liking comics? I don't know.
I don't know that I was ever social enough that that was an issue, I guess.
Okay. I was like, I remember, like, it was something you didn't talk about when you were, when I was in school, especially high school. You didn't mention it, you know, because people would look at you funny or maybe, you know, beat you up or something. But
no, the crowd I hung out with in high school and stuff, they were all geeks and stuff too, so.
Okay, yeah, see, like, I hung out with different people. Like, I hung out with people of all stripes, so I just kind of get along with everyone. I'm a chatty person. But it was kind of funny that, and then I go into my comic book world where I go to the comic shop when I was later on in high school and I could drive and I could get one. And it was just so fun to be there. And that's what I've enjoyed about this community and just being able to hang around people who are real fans of the property. But now I feel like I can talk with almost anyone and they're not going to look at me strange.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think that between, you know, the ongoing, you know, internet stuff, podcasts have really grown quite a bit over the last decade and stuff. There's just a ton of them out there. And if you want to talk about something with somebody, there's ways to find like-minded individuals.
There really is. And that's what's made it fun for me. I was surprised. I mentioned the other day that I was a co-host on a podcast, like I said, in my CrossFit gym. And immediately some guys, oh, I got a friend who has a Shadowhawk number one and a Youngblood number one. I was like, you know, kind of laughing. So I'm like, those things, yeah, there's 2 million of them. They're not worth anything. But he's like, I got the first issue. I was like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And then proceeds to start texting me links to his friend's eBay store where he sells little action figure like characters and stuff online on eBay. I was just like, it's kind of funny. And this guy, we never talked about it, but him just hearing that I was co-hosted on your podcast, it's accepted now. You know, you're not looked at as like a weirdo or you're a geek anymore. You're just a normal person.
Yeah. The cultural relevancy of this kind of trivia knowledge is so different than it used to be, where, you know, it used to be, you know, I'd mentioned I'm going to Comic-Con for vacation. It's a what's that?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
And then it came down to I've heard of that. And then it got to, are you dressing up for it? And now it's at which one?
Oh, yeah. It's changed over the years.
And it used to be that, I mean, at one point, the company I'm at had a design motif of industrial superhero for the office we moved into, which basically meant cement floors for a lot of it and superhero posters up around various places in the office. So there's this one of Marvel characters that is like what they used to use for not the original Marvel handbook, but the different solo one-shots they'd done.
Yeah.
Kind of a painted-esque kind of thing, all kind of put together. And at one point, you know, I'm walking by it, and I'm looking at it. It's like, okay, how many of these can I name? And it's like, hey, I can do most of them and stuff. And people are, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, who cares? Years later, companies doing a trivia contest kind of a thing is just a social thing one evening. And basically, it comes out that one of the categories was going to be Star Wars versus Star Trek, and another one was going to be comic books. My phone started ringing off the hook.
Everyone wanted you on their team.
Exactly.
Like, I want John Mayo.
it was kind of funny.
Yeah. You don't want to be matched up against Mark Waid, though. No, thank you.
No. I've actually seen him at I guess it was C2E2 one year, where he single-handedly took on the four people or four fans or whatever that were kind of the recurring trivia group or whatever there. And I'm not going to say soundly defeated them, but definitely defeated them. And was a great sport when he got one or two questions wrong, but the guy knows his stuff.
Yeah, I was like, he really knows his stuff. He's impressive.
Oh, he's insane.
Yeah, but I felt like this was a great decade to be a comic book fan, whether you like TV, movies, podcasts, comics, you like just going online. I feel like I'm inundated with the stuff, and I'm thoroughly enjoying my life.
I agree with all of that. If you couldn't find something to enjoy this decade, speak up, because there's something out there.
Yeah, you're a miserable person. No,
it's not you're miserable. It's you need help looking. You need to articulate what you want, and we can help you find it. Because it's out there.
It's true. There's literally something out there for everyone, I feel like. So, and heck, if you don't like anything that's out there, Marvel Unlimited, DC app, you have an unlimited back catalog of comics to read.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the things that's always kind of fun to do for these episodes is kind of find those covers that kind of epitomize either the year or, in this case, the decade. We didn't really talk about that when we did the yearly comic spotlight, But for 2019, what we had picked for the covers, we do a DC, a Marvel, and another.
Yeah.
We'd pick Doomsday Clock 12, because, I mean, I think that was a big deal for DC.
Yeah.
Marvel Comics 1000, I mean, if nothing else, just for the plethora of creators they had. And then for the other ones, I think the turning point moment for that in 2019 was the end of The Walking Dead.
For sure.
Taking a step further back and doing that same sort of a thing for the entire decade of the 2010s or 20-teens or whatever you want to call it, for me, it really wasn't too hard to figure it out.
Okay.
For yeah. DC, I think DC Universe Rebirth number one was kind of where things were really starting to come into focus and crystallize for DC.
Agree.
Didn't stay that way, but that's where I think they were most on the right path. It was a big deal for them. For Marvel, hands down, Star Wars number one.
Yeah, top selling comic in forever. That hit a million copies. It's like crazy.
It did insane. They did a great job with it. They're still going strong on the Star Wars stuff.
Yep.
It really showed that in addition to doing their own house properties, they can both be a good corporate citizen of their higher conglomerate and also essentially do a licensed property. So I think it was definitely a turning point moment for them.
Very much so.
And then I think for the other publishers, I still go with the end of The Walking Dead.
I think that's probably the most impactful independent comic thing that's happened over the entire decade, because it was the top selling comic for years and years and years on the independent side, and sometimes the number one selling comic at times. It ended unexpectedly in a fashion none of us saw it coming. None of us could have predicted when it would happen at an odd number. And while it was at a cultural high, you know, it had hit the zeitgeist, I felt like.
Yeah, it's something that most people, even out of comics, I think have some awareness of, more so than any other indie comic out there. And Kirkman kind of kept us guessing and glued to our seats to the very end.
Yeah. So I am sad to see that go. And, you know, hopefully he has something better in store for us in the future, or he revisits the property in the future, because there's other stories to be told in the universe.
Absolutely. I definitely think so. And then the other thing I did a little research on for the decade in review that I just think is a fun little statistic.
Yeah.
I went through and found out how many episodes the Comic Book Page podcast has released in the decade.
Ah, how many have you released?
1,349 episodes.
Holy mackerel, that's a lot of episodes.
For wow. Just shy of 1,484 hours of content. it's actually 1,483 hours and 56 minutes. So
wow.
I rounded up the 4 minutes.
And then you can probably double that for editing time, I imagine.
Oh, easily. Easily.
So when people ask you, where does your time go, John? Now you know.
That's like 62 days of content over that decade.
That's insane. 62 solid days.
Unless I did the math wrong.
No, that's crazy. That's a lot of time. Wow. Wow. You basically had a 2-month sabbatical you could have fit in.
I think even if I had, you couldn't listen to the entire thing during that short of a sabbatical.
No. I think you'd lose your mind if you did that.
probably. But I mean, hopefully people found some entertainment out of these episodes and such.
Hats off to you. That's impressive. I'm really impressed.
I mean, the fact I've kept it going the entire decade and stuff, was not always certain that would be the case.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, again, I thank the listeners for tuning in, to checking it out, to participating in the forum, the Slack channel, the preview spotlight episodes, the yearly comic spotlight episodes, and just providing the feedback to keep the stuff going.
Yeah, I appreciate you even having me as a co-host. You know, I help out here, but really you put in the most work, and I've enjoyed it. My wife tells me, at first she didn't like it when I was doing this, but now she's like, I think you need to do it. You need to talk with other people who like the same thing as you. I was like, okay.
I've enjoyed having you as a co-host. It's been a lot of fun. You've certainly opened my eyes to trying out some other things, some of which has worked, some of which hasn't.
It's cool.
But you come into everything we talk about with open eyes and an open mind. And that's it's fun to do. It's hard to do.
Yeah, it is hard to do. But I try to just take off any goggles or any kind of, you know, whatever I have going on in my past, you know, in my life, and look at things with a fresh perspective and see if I can enjoy it. Or
mm-hmm.
Think about people who might enjoy it.
Exactly. Being able to come at it and take the material in the best way possible is sometimes hard to do. Other times it's very easy to do because it's great material.
Yeah.
you know.
Well, I've had a great couple of years with you, even though I wasn't here for the whole decade. Maybe I'll be here for the next decade in review, and then we'll have spent more time together.
Certainly hoping so.
Yeah.
So anything else?
No, that pretty much does it for me.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.